Welcome to the Fairest Love Podcast, where we share spiritual and practical ideas for how to live family life with a beautiful, self-sacrificing love. On this episode of the podcast, we're diving into classical education and how it aims to educate the whole person. We're speaking with William Perales, the director of the University of Dallas' St. Ambrose Center, which aims to help bring classical education to schools throughout the United States. He shares with us what makes an education classical and the beauty of storytelling and imagination to help in understanding ourselves as human beings.
Thank you so much, William, for being on our podcast today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I'd love to hear about kind of your background and how you came to be the director of this program at St. Ambrose Center at University of Dallas.
Yeah, I think, it begins in one sense with my undergraduate education. I went to the St. Ignatius Institute, which was a Catholic Great Books program at the University of San Francisco. And there it's the program founded by Father Fessio, tied, connections with Ignatius Press. But it was a deep immersion in the great books and Catholic intellectual tradition, but also Catholic culture. So we had, the regular Western Civ sequence, the great books, but a strong stress on medieval life and culture and really being formed in the medieval imagination. And the importance of culture. Wonderful professors, seminar classes, lectures, just things, a strong faith element, a wonderful chaplain, Father Buckley, and just great community. So then after that, when I graduated, I fast forward a couple months, I started teaching and really didn't know what I was doing, but started teaching sixth grade math, science, and religion. And so much of what I was doing, I just saw like, I'm just going to kind of do the things that I the way I was taught in the Institute, the St. Ignatius Institute, but kind of do it at a sixth grade level. And obviously the first time you're teaching, you're still learning so much and trying things out. But then just over time, just kept developing it and realizing, okay, that works or that doesn't work for this grade level. I have to kind of, meet them where they are and not be overly intellectual. And then I taught sixth, seventh, eighth ELA. And that's where I really just found some more resources and really started to develop things and started working on the curriculum. The school let me change the curriculum and include stronger writing, which was really kind of rooted in one sense in the tradition of rhetoric. And then just literature choices that I think you would find in many, kind of really richly Catholic or classical schools today. Beautiful literature, wonderful stories, and then recitation, memorizing and recitation. Just started adding those elements to things. And the students were responding. We also started to do outdoor learning, just adding the physical to a lot of what we were doing. And so just kept building that. And so I started, the principal let me have more recommendations on the other grade levels and just kept growing and developing. Eventually taught high schools, started doing similar things. And then fast forward to where I was dean of students at a high school. And through that, actually, with cell phone issues and whatnot, got into conversations about what are we doing overall for our students and got into curriculum work for the Diocese of Fort Worth. And through that, we just started talking about how can we develop and deepen and grow our curriculum, but also the vision of the principals and the teachers. And so we just looked for the resources in the Catholic tradition of education and found some good documents and some good ways of approaching education that were really tied to what it means to be human. Mm-hmm. So we developed a program for principals to form them using the five essential marks of Catholic schools, and then started a new teacher formation program, kind of really rooting them in the vision, but also giving them practical in-service type training, and met with them regularly over a course of a year. Kept building all of that. At the same time, University of Dallas had started their classical education master's degree. And they started building out K-12 office, and they reached out to area or school principals who were doing something along those lines and basically asked, like, what are you doing? What are you looking for? How can UD be a resource? And that kind of started the relationship. And I would share what we were doing. I was at that point moving an elementary school classical, and then went to the high school level, and then UD opened up another position, and they asked if I was interested in applying. So applied, and just worked out. So so that's kind of how it was. But the idea with coming to UD was to grow the K-12 services to include a lot more professional development and then curriculum resources. So that's kind of the background.
Yes. And let's say for a parent who's listening to this podcast that doesn't know what classical school is, I know earlier in the conversation we talked about, you know, liberal arts education, classical education, Catholic classical, all those things. Can you give just as detailed as you'd like, or as simple or briefly as you'd like, what is classical education?
Yeah, I mean, there's many ways to answer this. And I think it can be helpful to go through like a brief series of overview statements, kind of what makes a school classical. But one way to think about it is, what do you seek for your child? Ultimately, what do you seek for your child? And think of when your child is most alive and flourishing. And when that happens, I mean, you're happy for your child, you're joyful for your child, but what's going on with the child? There's something happening in them where that they're kind of all their faculties are alive, and they're really being who they're called to be. Mm-hmm. And for that moment. So it's, what can education look like so that through education, which we tend to think of as not merely education, but formation, how can we form children so they're most fully alive and that they're ready and disposed to live a life of freedom, to live freely, but also to flourish in whatever they're called to do? And you know, that's going to be to respond to God's call. But so how do you actually do that? So I think it's in a classical approach, which really is the Catholic, in a sense, in this area, it's really in line with the Catholic teaching of the human person. You know, we're spiritual, we're moral, we're physical, and we're intellectual. So how can you form a child in all those areas harmoniously so that it comes together, and that they're prepared? You know, they physically, they've learned to discipline their body, they've learned to be resilient and persevere, but also develop physically. Intellectually, they're engaged, but also morally. And by morally, I don't mean that merely that they know the virtues or they know the right thing to do, but that they actually, you have formed them through the affections to care about doing the right thing. I like Augustine's line in this regard, to love the right things, an ordering of loves of the affections where they love the right things in the right order. That's part of what we mean by the moral aspect of classical. But ultimately that the spiritual formation is happening and that they see it all integrated. Mm-hmm. They experience it all integrated. So ultimately Catholic or classical is really about forming a child so harmoniously so that they are formed and ready and disposed to really take on anything that comes their way, anything they're called to do. And if they don't know how to do it, but that's okay, because they've learned how to problem solve. They've learned how to figure things out. They've learned how to work with their hands. And classical provides, when it's the fullness of classical, it provides that formation. Mm-hmm. And you see tremendous fruit out of this. And when someone is really doing well, they're happy. They're joyful because they're really living the way they've been called to live.
Mm, that's beautiful. I want to go back to what you said about forming, even this is a little bit, but it struck me, but the idea of forming discipline, you know, in your child. It's not just a matter of knowing the virtues. It's not just a matter of this or that. It's multifaceted, but can you explain a little bit more about like forming that discipline and how that will help a child be more successful later on?
Yes. I think there's a few facets to it. I mean, at the core, it's that you model what you want a child to do. You do it, and they see you do it. And that at a certain age, you start giving them what's sometimes called directed practice. You help them do it. You're there with them doing it. And you're forming habits or routines. And when you're doing it together and they're young, it tends to be something they really take to and they enjoy. And that gradually at a certain point, you've prepared them and now they can freely do it. So examples, I mean, very practical, you just think of in the beginning, like when you tell a child to clean their room or, you know, the floor is dirty or whatnot, like for some children, you actually have to show them. So it's doing that with them in the beginning, forming that they understand what it means to clean the room. So you've done it with them and then gradually they can do it themselves, but you give them an experience. You don't just tell them, but you give them the experience and you're there with them in the beginning so that when you're done, you say, this is what I mean by a clean room. Mm-hmm. And then they actually know, and they may need a little bit coaching after that, but over time that they're doing this and they go from the practice of it, the doing of it, to a gradual habit. And when it's a habit for something good, that's, you know, kind of simplistically, that's the definition of virtue in a sense.
Yes. Yeah. The habit of doing good. Learn that in fourth grade religion.
Yeah. I mean, it's that habit where it becomes really what the church says is a firm disposition. Mm-hmm. It's kind of becomes the disposition for them to do the good. Mm-hmm. But it's important that they develop discipline. And by that, they develop that habit for doing certain things, but they learn to kind of discipline their body, discipline their habits, discipline their will. Like, no, these are things that we have to do. And so if it's part of a family, like these are just our family responsibilities. When it's in a classroom, you know, giving children responsibilities in a classroom can be really helpful and beneficial to this. But with some of this, though, it a lot of it is kind of that practice. You've got to practice it. You can't just tell a child, can't really all of us, like, you can say it, but that doesn't mean we actually know we can do it yet. It's the practicing of it.
Mm-hmm. And how would you say that classical education kind of compares, or how is it, I guess, if we were looking at the education system today, how does it compare and how does it differ from what you see, like even just a Catholic school? And yeah, kind of just go a little bit, explain a little bit about that.
Yes. I mean, there's many variations of what's going on in schooling today, but I like to begin with kind of what is the child? Mm-hmm. What is the child? Kind of, this is kind of applying Aristotle's four causes, but what is the child? What, you know, a person, a child, a person, and what does it mean to be a person? What is a child composed of? Intellect, will, body, soul. I'd also say imagination, affections, and memory. And then who made the child? Well, God and the parents. And then the last question is, what is a child for? And this is what really separates this vision from a lot of other ways of schooling out there. Is a child just for a job? Is a child just for data? Is a child just, you know, to make money? But when you answer this with the Catholic vision, that you realize, no, the child is made for God. We're made for something more. Mm-hmm. But we get there by living in and through this world. Mm-hmm. So it's by forming a child to be ready to live their call in this world, but that they're still made for something more. And when you realize they're made for something more, then it's like, okay, we have to aim for the first things. C.S. Lewis has this line where if you just seek the second things, you often don't get the first things, but you often don't even get the second things. His idea was that, no, let's identify the first things, the primary things, and then aim for that. And when you aim for the first things, you get the second things thrown in. So if we keep like, what is a child for, the big picture, well, then we have to prepare a child to be able to respond to God's call. And as they do that, we get the second things of, they will learn a skill set for work. they will learn, you know, how to be social. They will learn all those secondary things, but it's because we had that bigger picture of what it means to be human and our ultimate end in God. When we have that as the priority, then the rest falls in. With a lot of other approaches, the view of the child is kind of truncated. It's reduced to some technical or utilitarian feature, and often that's just a sign of kind of the what you see about society. What is society for? And you just go on and on, and you see some schools that are more tech-based, some schools that are more even nature-based, and some schools that are just about the testing and AP classes. And we just think a child is made for something more. And the Catholic, especially the Catholic vision to this that you see expressed in Catholic schools that really embrace the church's teaching, but you also see this in many classical Catholic schools. They see that something more, and that's what they're aiming for.
And you mentioned tech schools. I'm curious, what would you say to like a disgruntled parent or person who just sees classical school, and they think antiquity. They think, okay, how are those kids going to live in the world? They have no idea, because typically classical schools, I mean, there might be technology within there, but there's no emphasis on it at all. Like, right. How would you argue in the sense for the fact that actually they are prepared, maybe even you can make an argument more so without those, you know, elements?
Yes. I mean, I'd want to eventually give them a few of the great resources out there, whether they're articles and there's a few good early talks and videos about highlighting from a tech or engineering perspective, business perspective. They want liberal arts majors. They want students who are formed, applicants who are formed in this tradition of classical. But what I would talk to that parent is like, so what, I think it's with any conversation, what are you aiming for? What do you seek? And is it just that they get the job? Or what kind of skill set does that person have? And there's so much information out there that says, we need people who are problem solvers. We need people who aren't just about the technical feature, because one thing that happens, and this is actually said by tech entrepreneurs, if you get people who are just in kind of with computer science majors and whatnot, by the time they get into the working field, what they learned is often obsolete. What they learned has developed, it's changed. So, okay, if that person doesn't know how to adapt, if that person doesn't have deeper skills of problem solving, of adapting, of figuring things out, they're gonna struggle if all they learned was a process. What a classical vision provides is through the curriculum and very hands-on and this stress on physical experience and sensory-based experience, filling the imagination and then doing intellectual work on top of that. When you approach things that way, the student develops tremendous skill sets that the business world says they want, the tech world says they want, and these students tend to actually do really well in those areas. But I would want to talk to the parent and just say, like, think of the actual skill sets that are needed in those areas. Mm-hmm. And just so you know, like, this will provide it. And we would just walk through the specifics of that. Mm-hmm. It's important for a child in the early years to get the foundations. Mm-hmm. And to fill their imagination through the sensory-based experiences. So we want them doing things with real objects. Mm-hmm. And, you know, getting a lot of nature, getting a lot of that, and then exploring and doing intellectual work on top of that, really developing the intellect, but also learning to discuss, learning to read or experience something and be able to analyze it, evaluate it, to discuss it, to problem solve that. And that's the real heavy work, in a sense, of that you find in classical. So we'd want to make sure the child knows how to do that. And then they have that as a habit eventually. It's their habit of mind. And when you get that person applying for a job, they tend to set themselves apart. And when you get them actually working, they have tremendous work skills. And with the other emphasis of virtue and the moral life, you also get someone with integrity, with character. And they understand the importance of that. And then when you think of the great literature and stories that are read in classical, then you've developed someone who understands what it means to be human on a level through stories and the imagination, on a level you don't get by just kind of reading something about what it means to be human or about what, you know, a human is. Through stories, you're really forming the imagination. And you're developing the affections of the child to see what it means to be the highs and lows. And that forms their affections, that forms their imagination, so that when someone is in the workplace, they actually now, I think, can really empathize with someone. They don't see whatever they're building, making, as just some mere technical product. That no, a human's going to have to do something with this. It just makes them more humane.
Yes. And I love how, well, everything you just said goes back to the question about the child. Like, what, you know, not what do you want to get out of this child? It's like, no, but what was your child made for? Your child was made in the image and likeness of God and to be eventually, hopefully, united with God in the future. And through imagination, through all these different aspects, you're actually cultivating that dignity, that ultimate end.
Yes.
And I think that's, yeah, very, very powerful. How does classical education kind of, you touched on this a little bit about, you know, in discussing jobs and, you know, like people finding success in workplace by being classically educated. How does it even further encourage just like kind of this lifelong love of learning?
So one important element of classical is that attention to what it means to be human. And one of the beautiful teachings of Aquinas is that we acquire knowledge through a few ways. One is being told something, and then the other is discovering it. And he places when he talks about when we discover things, there's this sense where, you know, we tend to take more ownership of it in a sense. When you discover something, you think you came to it, and maybe the teacher had set it up so that you would discover it. But at least from the student perspective, you discovered it and you just feel like I came to this. And it tends to delight you more than just being told something. And when you delight in something, it sits in your memory as a positive experience and you associate it with positive things. So in classical, one of the emphases, especially as they keep growing in the years, is that you allow opportunities for the students to discover things. So what that could mean is we don't ask kind of very analytic questions where there's tends to be kind of one limited and brief right answer, like yes, no, or you just give the fact the detail. Try to ask more open-ended questions. And when you ask more open-ended questions, kind of beginning with how and why. So instead of just asking the student for mere factual information, you're asking them about the why of it, the how of it, the deeper significance of something. They can explore it more. They can talk it out more. They might get into a discussion with someone else and start collaborating towards a deeper answer. Through that, they feel engaged. And through that, they feel like they're coming to a discovery of something. One way of putting it is, think of like sometimes we feel like the teacher's just asking me what I don't know by all these really detailed kind of gotcha questions. Mm-hmm. But instead, think of it as ask the student what he does know. And you do that through open-ended questions where they can talk. And through talking it out or writing it out, the teacher gets a sense, okay, he did talk about all of that. Or you know what? He didn't really mention this one area. So let's think of a way of asking that. But from the student perspective, it's I'm able to say all these things and have an actual conversation, and I might build a little bit from what someone else said, But the more I do things like that, I take ownership of my learning, and I enjoy it through the conversation. You tend to enjoy it because you feel like you're accomplishing something, you develop confidence, and that starts to build in a child this sense of like, this, I enjoy this. Mm-hmm. Like I'm making discoveries and I'm seeing things that are true, and maybe I say something and then someone else builds upon it. And I feel like, yes, they're affirming, they're acknowledging something true that I just said. And so that's just one way I think that you would do cultivate a sense of lifelong learning. The biggest thing is going to be the example that hopefully is in the home and that it's also in the school. It's important for students to see their parents, hopefully older siblings, but also their teachers are still learning. You know, how can a student see that? It might be just by the way a teacher answers questions. You know, I answer so much and says, you know, but that makes me wonder about this. I'm going to look that up and I'll let you all know tomorrow. Or let's go check that out together. And maybe there's a resource in the room where they can, so that the student sees, wow, teacher continues to learn. She doesn't know everything. She's continuing to learn and actually she likes it. Things like that. If a school does opportunities for parent enrichment to keep forming parents, that's wonderful. If they go home and they see their parents continuing to learn or read or do things together, or you know, hopefully things outdoor as well. Multiple ways, but you just kind of cultivate in a joyful way. You cultivate and purposeful. You cultivate a sense of, we continue to learn and we actually enjoy it.
Yes. And you actually mentioned a bit about the home. I am curious, this just came to me, but do you find that there are practices, you know, that you do in classical education as a teacher that you find that parents could also implement in their home? Like, have you found that with your own families, or like, you know, I'm just curious, because I know that there are some things that you mentioned about like asking the why or the how about things and not just giving it a yes or no answer or this or that kind of thing. I know my parents used to do that too, about just making sure that, you know, you're not just saying, oh, it's fine, but like actually delving into it. But are there other practices or ideas that parents could do?
Yes. I mean, I've heard wonderful stories from others. I know growing up for us, my parents were readers. They read a lot. I remember multiple times my dad just asking questions, like, and sometimes you feel like, oh no, not another question. Be careful what you say. You might get a question coming out of that. Oh, really? Why do you think that? Or how is that possible? But I know we try to make an emphasis of reading. So I would say, you know, yes, you're reading, but you're also, expose them to beauty. Expose them to beauty. Let them have a taste of the beautiful. And sure, it might be a beautiful piece of art. But how can beauty be present in your home or in the home experience? So, you know, to, yes, sure, flowers, but also nature is beautiful. Expose them to that. I would also say sport, athletics, physical activity can be beautiful. It can also be ugly, depending on how it's approached. But I mean, think of it this way, that Joseph Pieper, he says, I mean, there's different definitions of beauty out there, but they're all kind of saying the same thing, that when something is ordered and ordered well, there's an ordered state of being to it. And when something has that order and it's doing it's being the way it's supposed to be or doing what it's supposed to do, there's a glow that radiates from it. So he says it's a glow that radiates from an ordered state of being. Maritain says it's kind of the transcendentals all together, and it's the glow that comes from that. But it's when all these pieces are coming together that something shines from that. Then you have, because it's unity. And people talk about, you know, truth, goodness, and beauty as the transcendentals. Don't forget unity. Unity is another of the transcendentals. And without unity, the others fall apart in a sense. So how can you provide opportunities for unity in your home or in a school? I mean, think about when there's not unity in a family or not unity in a faculty. Mm-hmm. It's hard. It's the beauty's not shining. Mm-hmm. But when there is unity, the beauty shines. So that would be another way, is to focus on how can there be unity, you know, even if it's just after dinner, going to do something together as a family, you know, going outside and playing something together, something as simple as that, where they experience unity. I think it's important. The intellectual is very important, but the child needs to know and experience that there's more to being human than just the intellectual. But to do so in a way that's integrated, which is why at the beginning I mentioned intellectual, spiritual, physical, and moral, but developing those harmoniously, it's actually from the Code of Canon Law that talks about education should be developing those talents harmoniously. And when we do that, the child sees it all as one, it's integrated, and they experience the joy of it. So they're being formed in multiple faculties, those different ways of being human, and they're enjoying it, but they're growing and developing. Mm-hmm. That's what's really helpful. There's a British educator, Sir Ken Robinson, and he was asked this question about what he thinks of attempts to integrate curriculum. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, the world is already integrated. We're the ones who've disintegrated it by our approaches to just separating everything out, overanalyze everything, and never letting the child experience it as whole. Mm-hmm. So in so many ways, whether it's the school or in the home, letting them experience things in an integrated fashion, but with unity and the joy, through that, they will experience something beautiful. And by doing so, they'll see that it's good. Mm-hmm. And once they see that, they tend to see the truth of it.
And what would you say for, let's say, well, because ideally, you know, the ideal would be classical education from when they're little all the way up through high school. But let's say there's, you know, a family that wants to start when the children are older, like middle school, high school. How would you suggest parents going about explaining what that is to their child who's older and wants to know the answers? You know, like, why am I doing this? Or why is this important in life? Like, how would you explain it to a middle schooler?
I think it's to give them a fuller, richer education. Mm-hmm. To give them an education that will better prepare them to do anything they decide or hopefully they see they're called to do. Many approaches only train you for so much. And okay, you might learn that skill set, you might be good at certain things, but this vision of kind of Catholic classical education, it's about seeing the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. It's about preparing a child for more, as I mentioned. And we don't know if the child's going to be an architect, if the child's going to be a lawyer, a plumber, a dad, a mom. We don't know what the child's going to be. So what's the best foundation I can give you so that you're prepared to do whatever you end up doing? Mm-hmm. You know, son, it just may be you've been out of school that's only been able to do this much. We want to give you more. Mm-hmm. And this will give you more. This will prepare you for more. You know, just at one school I was at, seminar discussion was introduced. And in the beginning, one student said, you know, she didn't like it. She didn't like the stress on seminar and having to read these difficult works and then talk about it. Mm-hmm. She just did not like that and tended to stay quiet, or you could just tell, like, she wasn't happy with this. Mm-hmm. But over time, she reflected and she said, over time, I started to realize, oh, this is kind of interesting. Like, you know, I was introduced to this, I think she was 16 or 17, 16 probably, when she was introduced to it. And in the beginning, she didn't like it. But then she started to see, wow, these others, like my friends, they're actually contributing. And we're actually able to talk and discuss. And there's not an immediate, you're wrong, here's why, move on. It's like explore, discuss this. And we were given opportunities to explain and develop and maybe change our opinion about something. And it wasn't a direct effect on my grade. And she started to realize, wow, this is about something deeper. And so kind of fast forward, she basically said, over time, I started to realize through these discussions that the teacher was treating us like adults. The teacher was treating us like we had dignity and we had something to say, and he was willing to listen to it, and he didn't interrupt. And he let us talk and then let someone else talk. And we developed these arguments and understanding. She's like, wow, he really treated us like we were adults. And so she said, then I started to act like one. And she said, that's what clicked. And that's what changed me to like take this more seriously. And then from that point on, she just really developed in her intellectual kind of capacity in the class.
Wow, that's like such a tangible and very relevant story, considering kids don't know how to talk to each other anymore. Like they don't even know how to respect each other. They, you know, I mean, even as an adult, like it's hard to listen to someone and not want to say what you want to say and just get your answers out and stuff, and encouraging them to think so critically about even the other response. I think that's so needed. And yeah.
And so think about that child as she goes forward. Mm-hmm. When she goes to college, she feels so much more confident. Mm-hmm. She's competent to do the work, and she's also confident now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's less likely she's going to have the anxiety issues that are plaguing mm-hmm. so many of the younger generations. Because she knows there's a purpose. She knows where she's going. There's one, Alistair McIntyre. There's a lot of work on anxiety right now. But Alistair McIntyre has this discussion of what happens when you deprive students of this. Like if you don't give them this sense that they're part of something. And through teaching a child this way, especially through the seminar discussion, you convey to them, and the stories you pick, but you convey to them that they're part of a story. They're part of something, and they get to have an active part of that through these discussions and kind of fleshing that out. He says that, you know, we're storytelling animals. And there's this one line where he says, I can only answer the question, what am I to do if I can answer the prior question of what story or stories do I find myself a part? Mm-hmm. And so that's another key piece, is that you give the student a sense of like, no, you're part of something. There's a story running through history, through our culture. Our culture is a story, and we're trying to pass that on to you, but you have to take it and go with it and grow with it and help grow it as well. It's like that passing on of a flame. It's not just mere data. And so when students experience things that way, they really rise to the occasion and they grow. But they also have a sense of purpose. And one last thing with that is McIntyre says, if you don't give that to children, if you deprive them of those experiences and that sense of story, he has this line where he says, you leave them unscripted, anxious stutterers in their actions as in their words. So I just find that really powerful, that when you think of all the mental health plaguing so many of our society, maybe one of the reasons is we're not teaching them that they're part of something and it's something worth loving. Mm-hmm. Sure, it may need to develop and improve, mm-hmm. but giving them a sense of purpose is really important. And this approach to education, I think, does that.
Yeah. I just want to sit with that for a second. How would you, what are some things that resources, articles, you had mentioned the, I forget the name, I'm sorry, the five
essential marks
of the school, Catholic school. Can you, is there anything else that parent, that would be helpful for parents, whether they're considering classical education or whether they just would like to learn more?
I think the five essential marks are a wonderful place to reflect upon, especially for a faculty. Mm-hmm. We do work with schools where we run them through exercises to reflect on that and reflect on what do you seek? Mm-hmm. But then using the five essential marks to help kind of progress the conversation. But I think that's a wonderful resource. Actually, Bishop Conley, he just issued a pastoral letter on Catholic education, the joy and wonder of Catholic education. That's, I think, another wonderful resource. It's a pastoral letter, so it's not written as a as an academic document. That's wonderful. I'd always say the St. Ambrose Center at the University of Dallas. St. Ambrose Center at the University of Dallas, we do professional development, teacher formation for schools, but we also do sessions for parents. Those are growing. And, you know, we have our list on the website, but then we also, some of those sessions were developed because of a school-specific request. So we will develop sessions if you don't see something you want on there, but it's part of this vision or a part of a need. We'll develop it. We have a great team with multiple areas of experience that we can do that. So I'd say that's another thing to think about. But there's so many wonderful parent communities out there and school communities out there doing things. So I'd say tap into that. But really, it's about, you know, what does it mean to be human? What does a child mean? What is a child for? And then how are ways we can develop that? So I'd say kind of those are a couple.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much. And thank you for sharing your expertise in classical schools with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Ferris Love Podcast. In 2024, we want to reach as many people as possible. You can help by sharing this episode with a friend, subscribing to the podcast, or leaving a review. To learn more, visit us at ferrislovestrine.org.